Cody Brewer's approach to music is not singular. Even within the same project, you'll hear different sounds from one release to the next, and get different experiences at each show. Cody is best known for his guitar work in the Moai Broadcast, and more recently, the variety of sounds that is Grasshopper. Join us as we press play on Cody Brewer.
Support for this podcast comes from Musicians Haven, a nonprofit organization focused on providing opportunities for musical enjoyment. Based out of Claremore, Musicians Haven provides events like jam nights, vinyl nights, and intimate concerts. More information on Musicians Haven at musichaven.org or at facebook.com/musicianshaveninc.
So as we continue our Press Play OK series of local artists, we have another great local musician with us today, Cody Brewer. How are you today, Cody?
Doing pretty well, Tip.
So you play, you have played in a number of bands, and you do solo work as well. And we'll definitely get into what you're doing now here in just a little bit. But let's start off with where it began. When you first got into music, how did it happen? Who were the artists that got you started?
I definitely had the fortunate growing up in a family that appreciated music. So my great grandpa Sterling Rice was got me into the banjo. Which I currently do play now, and my dad also got me into the guitar, so I kind of started when I was like 10, so that's kind of how I started. James Taylor was a big influence growing up, that kind of bluegrass, a lot of acoustic stuff. Of course, you know, when I turned 12, I got into Nirvana. That was kind of my favorite band of all time, and all I did, I wanted to be sad all the time. So yeah, that's kind of where it started, and it's evolved, you know, currently into more of a jam grass. I mean, mixing all the genres together kind of in some weird blend. So
you mentioned you first picked up the banjo around like 10 years old, something like that?
Yeah, around then. I didn't really take to it till probably I was more closer to like 22, 23 or so, like something like that.
Well, I was going to say, you know, that's not an instrument that you see a lot of young people going towards. So when you first picked it up, was that something that you had to kind of warm up to? You know, it's not like the sexiest instrument out there.
No, yeah.
No offense or anything. But
hey, no.
But, you know, is that something you had to kind of warm up to?
Totally, yeah. I mean, I was always going to, you know, Thanksgivings and stuff, being around it. And it was cool. I always enjoyed the sound of it. But, like, trying to play it, I just couldn't figure it out. And so I didn't want anything to do with it for a long, long time. And then, yeah, just one day, it's kind of funny how it happened. My grandma gave me one. She gave me this little cheap banjo, and I just started picking around on it. And I don't know, it took over. And all of a sudden, I mean, you know, Tulsa is a guitar town, and there's a lot of great guitar players out there. And there's no banjo players hardly, you know, there's like maybe a couple of us. But so I figured I could get a little more gigs, perhaps, you know, with the banjo and kind of be a side guy in that respect. And so, yeah, I don't know, just kind of learned from the guitar to the banjo, and it took over.
You know, I assume that definitely influenced a lot of your songwriting early on, was playing this instrument that you don't hear as often as, you know, guitars and even, you know, acoustic guitars. I also know that you're kind of an outdoorsy person, and I see all the time you're floating the river, you're going camping, you're doing all that kind of stuff. And you can kind of hear that in your music as well. You hear like the natural side of it. How has nature influenced your songwriting?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely enjoy the outdoors a lot. You know, going mushroom hunting with my grandparents, or just kind of being, you know, growing up in the country, I think had a lot to do with it, you know. I enjoy that aspect of, I guess, country music and bluegrass and so forth. Kind of seems a little more in tune with nature, I guess. Maybe some more than rock and roll, maybe, perhaps. And I would just say, yeah, like being out in nature, I don't know. There's just a lot of, that's where my songwriting ideas typically come from, you know, and like being alone and so forth, you know. But yeah, I like to try to put those influences in there, you know, from exploring, I guess, yeah.
Sitting around the campfire.
Totally, yeah.
When I drive to that small town where I'm from, something seems to take over me. Feels like peace and tranquility. simple with a sense of harmony.
Back when things were more normal, you were playing different gigs every single week. You had solo shows, you had duo and trio shows, you played with full bands.
I miss those days.
I miss those days too, man. You know, most people, they play with the same band every week, you know, or every time they play with the same people. What does it take to adapt to playing with different people all the time?
Man, it's a, you know, when I first started, it was the Grasshopper Group. It was me and my friend Dylan. And so we did that for several years, and then he decided to move off to California. And so I was kind of stuck in this position that I had to either, you know, quit the Grasshopper Group or kind of continue on. And luckily, Cody Clinton and some other people came along and really were interested. And so I kind of, yeah, took it. It was a learning curve, you know, for sure. And then just kind of, I don't know, it's been fortunate that Tulsa's got so many great artists in town and they're willing to play with a bunch of people because they want to make their, you know, money and so forth, or the rent, you know, like Jordan Allen, Nicholas Foster, and all these cats. It's been a great ride, man. I mean, like, Tulsa's just pretty open, I would say. They're, you know, pretty, you find that Paul Benjamin plays in this band, that band, or, you know, the list goes on.
Yeah, I mean, so like, when you go out and you either join a jam session or you play with these people who kind of, they float around and they play in all sorts of different projects, I mean, it seems like that's almost a different experience than just playing the same songs with the same band every single week.
Totally, and I think it makes you a different musician. It kind of, I like playing with different people in the respect of, like, it brings something out of you that you've never done before. It's like, you know, playing with you, or it's like, oh wow, I've never done this on the banjo before. I don't know what's happening, you know. So it's like, and that's what me and Cody and Clinton and some others that we've kind of like gelled, you know, and it's like, okay, we can do this. This is cool. And then recently, and you know, it's beautiful that they're getting busier and busier, but you know, I have to kind of find some people to fill the spots. And so, yeah, the sound kind of changes here and there, but it's pretty fun to kind of explore those different sounds with another person, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you mentioned Grasshopper, and when people hear your name, I think that Grasshopper is like the thing that comes to their mind in the first place. That being said, Grasshopper's changed a lot. It's jumped around different sounds. It has different musicians floating through it. So I guess just the general question I want to ask is, what is Grasshopper?
That is a good question. I've been trying to figure that out. So yeah, it started off as kind of a folk duo, singer-songwriter mainly, with some bluegrass stuff. And then I've recently tried to dive into more of a standard bluegrass with my own banjo playing. And learning that with Osley, it's some like melodic stuff. But yeah, it's been a tough one. I've been trying to figure that one out lately. I've been going with the idea of maybe like having Cody Brewer trio, you know, or kind of separating the idea of Grasshopper being a full band. Because our full band sound right now is pretty, as it gets funky, it's rock and roll. There's a little bit of bluegrass in there, you know. But so I'm trying to, yeah, divert and try to, I don't know, make something a little more, like when you see Grasshopper, that's what you're going to expect, you know? And then maybe the Cody Brewer thing dives off into maybe more singer-songwriter and stuff like that. So
you think that maybe having a more, not predictable, but, you know, people can expect a certain thing when they
go
to the show?
Yeah, yeah. Because okay. I've kind of, yeah, blurred the lines, you know, too many times, and it's like, they're like, oh, I thought it was going to be the full band, or I thought it was going to do this, or that, and like, is people you play with like change, it's a whole different sound. So I kind of want to make sure the audience knows what they're getting into.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. So you want to define Grasshopper a little bit more? And
yeah, yeah. Or at least that's the new plan.
That's the new plan. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
One more step to get to where you're going. First you got to rise upon your feet. Go get your checks and balance what you've broken. And toss and boost this sea. You said it's not me. No, it is not me.
You know, you definitely thought of as a musician first when people are talking about going to see Cody Brewer, it's as a musician. But You also have had your hand in events around the area, and namely Easter Island Festival. You know, you were part of the group that sort of put that together in the first place.
Yep. Moai Broadcast. Yep.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you got started with Easter Island and sort of the idea when you first started putting that festival together.
So we started back in 2009, I believe. 2008, I think at the end of 2008. I just started getting into music festivals right then in like 2007, and it just kind of opened my mind. Like, I had no clue that they really even existed, and it was like my favorite thing that I'd found, and I was like, oh man, this whole new world of people blending sounds, like, you know, bluegrass, jam bands, all this kind of thing was really cool to me. And so when our band started kind of going and playing some of those things, we had the crazy wild idea to start our own. And so that's where the Moai Heads and the Easter Island thing came about. And yeah, we've just been trying to keep it going ever since.
I know when you started, you said 08, 09?
Yeah.
So it's been quite a while, maybe 11 or 12 years that you've had it consistently?
Yeah, we took 1 year off, and then obviously we're taking this year off.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would have been, yeah, the 10th anniversary was going to be this year.
Festivals back then were quite a bit different. And, you know, we're talking about festivals. One of the first times I ever met you was at Wakarusa Festival in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah.
And if you look at how, well, obviously Wakarusa isn't around anymore. And the festival feel, I feel like, has changed a lot between when you started and now. Even if you look at other local festivals, like what Backwoods Bash used to be and what it is now. How has Easter Island evolved over those years, and how has it changed?
Yeah, it kind of seemed like there was more jam bands or something, like, you know, back in the day or something like that. And it's getting more, like, I feel like it's more inclusive. You know, you can go see hip-hop, too, like, or maybe a hard rock band, you know, or something like that. So we're trying to make sure everybody's like a part of it as well. I'm not just like the hippie kids, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think that's definitely a thing that's changed a little bit. We've also tried to keep the notion of keeping it small and manageable, but like trying to keep that intimacy. And I think a lot of festivals have kind of, you know, like Backwoods Bash have taken a different model, and they've kind of opened the doors up to, you know, having 5,000 to 6,000, 10,000 people. So, you know, kind of, I think, lessens the intimacy of it all. And I think that's what Easter Island, we've kind of noticed from our fan base, that that's kind of what they want. You know, they want like that camaraderie with their friends and so forth. So
how do you make, you know, I mean, I guess it's sort of like a forced, intimate feel. How do you make that still feel genuine when you have so many people trying to show up? How do you make sure that it's still an intimate community setting and still that feel that you're going for?
I think it's obviously the great local, like, Tulsa talent. I mean, keeps that going, I think. You know, some of these people are in around town that we can see and speak to. I mean, you can go talk to Paul or Jacob Tovar or anything like that off the stage, or, you know, Tip, you can go hang out with them. So that's cool. I think it keeps the intimacy with that. We kind of keep the stage pretty low. Like, it's not like a huge, you know, stage that you can't see the artist on. It's, so to me, it's like, and we've kept the backstage and all that open to, so all the guests can go hang out with the band can hang out with the guest. We've created kind of like they have a whole hour to set up and sound check. So it's not like you're just rushed on the stage. Mm-hmm. I feel like all the bands kind of enjoy that time to get a good sound check in, and I just feel like it comes across a little better. You have more time to kind of enjoy yourself, and you're not getting bombarded so much. It's like there's only one band per hour, so there's just, you know, you get to go see that, or you can go to your campsite if you want. So in other festivals, you're kind of like, oh, man, I got to go see this band. I got to get 20 minutes of this band. And yeah. So we kind of took that out of it to kind of create more of this intimacy, I think, and a little more, like, relaxed nature. So I think that tends to keep the intimacy going.
Yeah, so you're not like having to decide which band you're missing instead of, you know,
yeah,
just staying and relaxed and hanging out.
And you can totally go up, you know, hang out with the backstage with the artist. And so it's kind of like this whole VIP experience in a way. And, you know, keeping it small. I think we're going to have like 2,000 people this year. But so I think it's good.
Yeah. So you mentioned this year, obviously big changes. You all announced that the festival isn't happening, at least in a traditional sense, this year. Are you planning to do anything like an alternate to the festival? Anything online? Or
I thought about it, and I just I'm gonna go ahead and nix that idea for this year.
Okay.
I'm not so great with the technology. It's been a lot of work trying to get it going in the first place, and then the rug was pulled under, and try to get it going again. It was going to happen this last weekend, and so it's just a lot of work to continue to keep trying and trying. But I do have a bunch of merch that I'm going to be uploading soon, so be on the lookout for that. So
I guess that kind of highlights an important part of this festival, is that it is 100% local and 100% DIY, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So,
I mean, we do bring in some regional acts, from Colorado, California. So we try to implement like one to two big bands that are like traveling around and they have a good name and so forth. And
well, I should say, should clarify, 100% locally produced.
Yes.
Like
yes,
everyone
yes.
who does this festival is here in Tulsa or in the area, mm-hmm. and it's all done by people within our music scene.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's kind of crazy that a festival like that has grown as much as it has and has stayed around as long as it has. And it kind of just shows that you guys are just doing it right, I guess.
I guess so, yeah. I know my partner and I always wanted to let's go for the stars and make it bigger and better. And he kind of is always like reeling me back in. And it's been a good thing that it's just like, all right, this is what it is. It's a small, intimate festival, and let's keep it going. And honestly, it's like, yeah, you see some festivals, which they're doing their thing, but it just gets too unmanageable. And like a lot of people's, I feel like the time just gets spent other ways, It's just not as, things get, go by the wayside. And
sure.
Whether it be porta potties or this and that, just to make the comfortable experience, So I feel like we're doing better and better every year with that. So
nice. How much of your success do you attribute to, I believe it's Nick driving around downtown with a giant speaker on the back of his truck blasting, I don't want to say advertisements, but promotion for Easter
Island? Yeah. Man, it's to help a lot. Everybody enjoyed that last year with the First Fridays and all that good stuff. The cops got onto us for that this last year, and so we weren't going to do that this year. But we had my friend built a 12-foot Moai head, and so we were traveling around with that. We went to, I think the last show we went to was Broncho, so we were, that's kind of our new trailer in a sense. Yeah,
nice.
And it made the news not too long ago. That was kind of cool.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit.
It's ridiculous.
It is kind of ridiculous, but in a good way.
In a good way.
So let's talk a little bit about bluegrass. Just kind of the idea and the genre in general. When people think about bluegrass, I think a lot of people, what comes to mind is like that old times bluegrass, Bill Monroe, or even like dueling banjos. I think is just kind of the initial thought when it comes to
For sure.
the genre of bluegrass. What does bluegrass sound like right now, and how has it evolved in recent years?
Yeah, I'd say that most people's ideas, when they see a banjo, they're like, oh, paddle faster and all this stuff. And I feel like the new bluegrass is, they're obviously trying to get away from all that. If you look more into like bluegrass, it's, comes from blues and is all brought, by black artists and so forth. So, I mean, that's like Bill Monroe learned all that. So I think that's been lost in kind of this whitewashing. And hopefully, and today, we got Bela Fleck, kind of it's one of my heroes. Chris Thiele, they're taking it into classical. Got Green Sky Bluegrass kind of going like this like fish route, like a little more open jams. Billy Strings is kind of taking it to this new rock and roll, open jam kind of style, which is cool because it's like, bringing this whole new class of fans, and it's really neat to see with people of the jam band world or you got Chris Thiele with the classical world. And it's just they're blending it all together. And it's really neat to see.
So you mentioned earlier, like jam grass, you're mm-hmm. seeing these genres or these sounds kind of mixing together. And Do you find that that brings in both of those audiences, or does it create a new audience, or, you know, how does that affect who's coming to see your shows?
True. Man, I would say it's kind of like finding out more people are like open-minded to genres of music instead of just being so staunch and like, I only like rock and roll, like, or I only like this. And to me, what I'm trying to do with Grasshopper is, yeah, I mean, I'll play a honky tonk tune and then I'll go into a, you know, more of a rock and roll thing, or I'll play some of the Meters, you know, like do some funk. And so it's kind of like, you guys are on a ride. Let's, you know, this is what I like. I hope you like it too, kind of thing. And I think that's cool about a lot of artists these days. They're not really staying totally to their lane, and which is neat. Yeah. You can see hip hop artists that are doing like all kinds of random stuff. I mean, there's that Gangsta Grass band that, right, you know, yeah, Brand J just got to play with, and it's like blending rap and bluegrass. It's kind of strange, but it's awesome. You know, it's cool.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of showing genres aren't necessarily as important as they used to be, I think, you know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And you get stuck in that lane and you have to only be in that lane. It's good that we're moving past that. So
yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people will see you as that folk bluegrass artist when they think of you now, but you mentioned Moai Broadcast, and mm-hmm. you know, when we play a song by Moai Broadcast on the air, we get calls about it like almost every single time. Someone will be like, who is that?
Guess still playing the songs?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Oh, we're still playing the songs. Yeah, we get, like I said, we get calls. People are like, dude, that song was ripping. You know, who was that? Like, that's a local artist. What I want to know is a little bit more about Moai Broadcast. So you guys were more than just music. You also had like visuals to your shows, and even just the artwork and the concepts of the albums kind of played into the entire band. So can you tell us just a little bit about what was Moai Broadcast, or what is Moai Broadcast?
Yeah, so we started back in around the end of 2008. I kind of just, there was a band called Tectonic in town, which is a really fun, like, electronic kind of dancey band. And I just bugged the hell out of them. It's like, can I play with you, you know? Anyways, so we got together and got our bass player off of Craigslist, of all things. So that was cool. We just meshed, man. Like, you know, it was a kind of a, just an instrumental band at first. And then all of a sudden we got Josh Kaufman in there, and he brought the vocals and the saxophone, which is really cool, and brought a whole nother level to it. This electronic dance kind of thing. And we obviously like enjoyed a lot of jam bands, like Soundtribe, Sector 9 was a huge influence. Fish, String Cheese Incident, and all those guys, you know, just blending different sounds together. And yeah, man, it kind of turned into an idea, you know, with the Easter Island. And my friend had some lights in his garage, and we were like, all right, can we mess with those? And then Nick invested in a whole light setup, and it was a cool deal, man. It was fun. I miss doing that.
Are you not officially not a band anymore?
I guess we never really officially quit or anything like that. Yeah, people grew up and kids, you know.
Yeah.
But we've always talked about doing it again. So we'll see. We talked about it this last week.
So yeah,
we'll see.
So we never really see any new music from Moai. Like you said, you're not officially not doing it, but you're also kind of just not doing it. Is that a possibility at some point? Like, even if you're not out gigging, what's up with new music from Moai?
As of right now, I know Nick has been writing a lot of his own tunes. He's got a new band called Fatso that he's like working on, kind of in the same genre. But yes, there's some new Moai stuff that like has been sitting on a shelf for a long time that I would love to pick up.
So can we push you a little bit
yes.
towards the studio? Like, can we get some new Moai? Because like I said, people like it, you know? People don't really, they don't necessarily know what it is because you guys don't go out there and play all the time. But it's like people call in and they're like, you know, that song was insane. Who is it? I need to know. And then they'll go like download your whole discography and call us back later on. Like, you know, it's like people actually really,
that's cool.
really are into it. So
I know every once in a while I go onto like the Spotify thing and see how many like, oh wow, people are playing it still. And just for my own ears, I'm like, oh yeah, this was a cool band. Like,
yeah.
you know, take it a few years back, you kind of like get to listen to it in a different light. So that's been cool. I would love to be out there playing again one of these days.
So
come on, guys, we can do it.
So this is like my I'm not going to physically push you, but like my emotional encouragement to get towards the studio for all of Moai Broadcast, because Tulsa Music likes you guys.
All right.
Kind of pulling back a little bit, as a musician, you know, you were out gigging. How many shows would you say you played in the normal time?
Man, I was averaging about 3 to 4 gigs at least, you know, sometimes more.
Every week?
So, yeah. There for a while, I was definitely at least 3.
Yeah, you were...
Sometimes more.
You were always out there. When we had a concert calendar, at least a couple days a week, it was like Cody Brewer or Grasshopper. How has your life changed since the start of the pandemic?
Well, let's see. I had the Cellar Dweller gig going for like 3 years, and I quit back in July just to kind of, work on some songwriting and so forth. And now I wish I would have kept going because I didn't know what was going to happen. But I would definitely say, it's been fun to like explore new things and kind of work on my instrument, you know, at home and try to like hone those skills a little better. So that's been kind of fun. I would say not playing though is it definitely takes it out of you. And, you know, luckily we're getting back at it some more. So that's been cool. But man, I took it in a positive direction, I thought, you know, just to work on my music at home and try to keep those skills going. Because, if you're playing out all the time, you definitely, like, you build up some strength. And I was just playing the same songs over and over, though. That's kind of like what kind of was burning me out a little bit. So, and I feel like the audience might need some fresh, you know, come back out with some fresh ears a little bit. So
I'm curious, it's been a good thing. You know, is it, As someone who was kind of motivated because you were out there playing all the time, and then, well, you mentioned maybe you were burning out a little bit. How have you, like, was it easy to just go back home and start playing by yourself and working on stuff, or was that something that, you know, you had to kind of mentally push yourself towards?
Yeah, I definitely, there was several weeks where I never even picked up the thing, and it was kind of, that's a rare occurrence, but yeah, there's just a moment you're like, you know what? I just want to do something else for a little while, you know? Or I've been picking up my guitar lately, you know? It's like, all right, let's change this instrument up a little bit and like get back on the what I used to play, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's been cool too.
Nice. So what's next for musicians like you where gigging out is a big part of your life? You know, if you don't have those 2 to 3 shows every week, have you thought of new ways to, you said you're not very technology driven, but have you thought of new ways to maybe keep out in front of the public's eye if you can't play as often as you used to?
Yeah, my other partners, they would like to do the stream a little more, and I've done a few of them. I would like to have a little more of a backdrop and trying to make me like produce it a little better than the typical just kind of sitting up in your house. And so I've definitely been thinking about that. Like I said, I'm not the most technology-driven person, but the social distance thing has been cool. I would like to do, you know, some, like, Billy Strings and them are doing, like, those drive-in concerts are kind of cool. I just miss, though, like, you know, getting all sweaty with some and people at the Canes Ballroom, you know? I don't know. There's something I can't quite, I don't think you could fill that gap. I'm not really sure.
It's really weird to play a live stream and not have somebody in front of you.
Ah, it's terrible.
You know, like that energy that you're getting from the crowd. You know, it's not there, or you have to, that through a screen or something like that.
Yeah, and it's hard to like kind of put yourself in that position and like really like bring it. Which I mean, some people can. It's definitely something that you feel it, you know. You're missing it. So
yeah, absolutely.
I don't know yet. We'll see. We'll see what the future holds, man. Some people are really creative with all that stuff. It's been fun to watch, and it's cool to see a bunch of music at home, you know, too.
Well, when you force creative people to adapt,
exactly,
they're creative already, so they're going to come up with some new stuff. So with the extra time at home and maybe time to work on your instrument but also write songs, are we going to see new recorded music from you anytime soon?
Yeah, we're actually getting in the studio in the next week or so.
Nice.
Yep. So we're going to have some new Grasshopper. Some of the songs we've been playing for many years that's never been recorded. I think our last album was in 2015. So it's about time.
Yeah. And so, it's going to be a full length
Yeah, full-length album this time. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, how all that will pan out, but I'm not looking forward to the Kickstarter part. But yes, we're going to get it in the studio, and then we're going to have some of the newer material in there as well, which kind of has a, I would say, kind of a Wilco meets Blake Mills direction. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, finally, the last question I have for you, where can people find your music? Where can they listen to you?
We're on, you know, on the Spotify, the iTunes, all that good stuff. Be sure to look out. I think we've got some, you know, social distance gigs coming up. So check out that. Hope you make it. Be safe.
Very cool. So new Grasshopper coming sometime soon. I'm just going to go ahead and say new Moai coming sometime soon.
All right.
And you're going to have to live up to that, right?
I'm living up to it.
All right.
I'll tell the guys today.
Cody, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Tip. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Cody Brewer for talking with us today here on Press Play OK. This podcast is produced by RSU Radio on the campus of Rogers State University. Thanks again to Musicians Haven for making this podcast possible. You can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and RSUradio.com. Let's leave you with some Moai Broadcast.